Good morning, and greetings in Christ's name this morning. Looking forward to sharing what God has laid in my heart. For just an idea of what I'm going to be talking about, I'm going to be talking about looking at the trials, some trials that both some people in the Old Testament faced, and maybe looking at some trials that you may face. And the purpose of this is so that you turn your heart to God. So looking at trials that others have faced, and maybe what you will face or do face. And the purpose of it is that you turn your heart to God. Question, and this is some ways I'm going back to a sermon we had 2 weeks ago. Why? If you remember the Kevin's sermon, I think it was 2 weeks ago, and right after the tornado, why God? So why does God use trials in our life? Is it just to make life hard for us? Of course not. In some ways, you may have to be God to fully answer that question. But let's look at, for first passage, let's look at John chapter 9. This is the story of Jesus, or when Jesus was on earth. It may partially answer the question. John chapter 9, verses 1 through 3. And as Jesus passed by, he saw a man which was blind from his birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Jesus answered, Neither hath this man sinned nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him. So God wants you to work. God wants to work in your life. And God wants you to turn your heart to him as you go through struggles in life. Turn your heart to him. First person we'll be looking at kind of then is Joseph. Going to look at what we can learn in his trials so that we can turn our hearts to God. Joseph, in his younger years, in some ways, he may not have been the wisest man in that he shared with his other brothers some of the dreams he had. But those dreams were prophetical, and I think God may have used them to strengthen him in the future. He did seem to be a man that had a strong conscience. He always said, it seemed like he was fully honest. And then his first major trial, in my view of his book, was when he was sold into slavery. If we're in the process of comparing trials, if I compare mine compared to Joseph's, I would say my trials are pretty easy. And then later, so he was sold into slavery. Later then, for obeying God, we talked about that this morning, for doing right in our Sunday school. Later, for obeying God, then, he was thrown into prison. So first he was a slave, then he was a prisoner yet, on top of that. Later, he interpreted the butler's dream, and then the butler forgot him. In some ways, Joseph did one thing right after the other, and he was just, his life would go up a little bit and then drop down lower. Go up a little bit and drop down lower. And just continue that scale. It seemed every time God was lowering his standard of living, or his problems were increasing, his trials were increasing. Joseph was a slave and a prisoner for an estimated around 13 years. Estimated about 13 years. We'll come back to that 13 years again later. Finally, God got him out of prison and made him a ruler in Egypt. And then I think things went up considerably. He was doing much better. Then later his brothers come. And that's I don't know if God has brought people, if you've been hurt by someone, God sometimes brings those people back in your life, and you have to learn to forgive. I think this was a rough time for Joseph, probably. And how did Joseph forgive? We're going to turn to Genesis 45 then. So how do you forgive in some of these times? And this is one way Joseph kind of did it. I'm going to read the first 9 verses to start off with. Genesis 45. Then Joseph could not refrain himself before all them that stood by him, and he cried, Cause every man to go out from me. And there stood no man with him, while Joseph made himself known unto his brethren. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians in the house of Pharaoh heard. And Joseph said unto his brethren, I am Joseph, doth my father yet live? And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. And Joseph said unto his brethren, Come near to me, I pray you. And they came near and said, and he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom ye sold into Egypt. Now therefore be not grieved, nor angry with yourselves, that ye sold me hither. For God did send me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years, in which there shall neither be earing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth, and to save your lives by great deliverance. So now it was not you that sent me hither, but God. And he made me a father in the house of, and made me father to Pharaoh, and lord of all his house, and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. The first thing Joseph did that I see here in this passage is he acknowledged the pain. He didn't blame them, but he acknowledged it. I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. He didn't downplay that. But then right after that, 3 times this is repeated. For God did send me before you to preserve life, in verse 5. In verse 7, and God sent me before you to preserve your posterity. In verse 8, and now it is not you that sent me hither, but God. He saw God working in his life through this time. Jumping back to that 13, I think it was, I'm not sure Verton didn't mention it, that 13 is not just a bad number. It's actually a good number. If I understand it, I forget what he said then, but I was studying a little bit on it. 13 is actually a combination of 12 and 1. In the Jewish mind, that's how they think. 13 is a combination. Anybody know what 12 would stand for? Words in Jewish, 12. What does 12 mean? It'd be the tribes, the 12 tribes of Israel. In other words, man, us. What does 1 stand for? 1 what? 1 God, correct. So it's God and man make up 13. So there's two people. So as God and man work together, 13 is the number. In Joseph's life, he was a prisoner for 13 years. God and man worked together in this. It was not just the brothers. It was not just God. Like, they worked together, and they saved Israel. They saved the world, even almost, if through this famine. So God can work together with man in your trials to accomplish his purpose. And just thinking about Joseph, I don't know how he did it in those 13 years. We can look back and see he became ruler of Israel, or ruler of Egypt. He didn't. He didn't know that, I don't think. And so I was trying to figure out, how did he live those 13 years without becoming bitter? I mean, if I have problems for 13 days, that's a long time. He lived 13 years. The only thing I can come up with is he trusted God. He had a full trust in God. He turned his heart to the Lord in his trials. So I want you to do the same thing as you face your trials. Turn your heart to the Lord. So David, and we'll go to the next person studying. David, what can we learn in his trials? How can we turn our heart to God? First story is David and Goliath, I'm thinking about. So in David and Goliath, David came on the scene a little later in the story, kind of. Goliath had already for 40 days taunted the Israelites. Told them pretty much, defied the armies of the living God. And Saul didn't know what to do. Didn't know what to do at all. Let's turn to 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel 17. Going to read verses 32 to 37. And David said to Saul, Let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, Thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight him, for thou art but a youth, and he is a man of war from his youth. And David said to Saul, Thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear and took the lamb out of the flock. And I went out after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by the beard and smote him and slew him. Thy servant slew both a lion and a bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. And David said, moreover, the Lord hath that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and the bear, and out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go, and the Lord be with thee. I have a question for you. Was this a trial for David? I don't know. Reading this, I actually don't see it as a trial for David. He doesn't seem to have a problem with this. If you know this, the Philistine, it was a problem in his life. He was going to get rid of it. But was it a trial? Like, was it something he struggled with? And why, if it wasn't? It was something Saul struggled with for the last 40 days. Saul was a big, strong man. David was this weakling. I don't know about weakling, but he was a young man. What made the difference? And I think it really comes down to he trusted God through this time. Trust in God can turn your trials into non-events. Now, it's not like David didn't just sit on his haunches and say, God, take care of Goliath. He did go forward. He did face Goliath. He did face his giant. But with the trust in God, it wasn't as much of a trial to him. So as you go through life, trust God. Follow him. Turn your hearts to God. And I think your trials may a little bit more melt away. I'm going to go to Psalm 54. This is another psalm of David. This was when the Ziphites had told Saul where David was. And David, then Saul had come down to catch David. I'm going to read the chapter. It's just a short chapter. Psalm 54. Save me, O God, by thy name, and judge me by thy strength. Hear my prayer, O God. Give ear to the words of my mouth. For strangers are risen up against me, and oppressors seek after my soul. They have not set God before them, Selah. Behold, God is mine helper. The Lord is with them that uphold my soul. He shall reward evil unto mine enemies. Cut them off from thy truth. I will freely sacrifice unto thee. I will sing praises to thy name, O Lord, for it is good. For he hath delivered me out of all trouble, and mine eye hath seen his desire upon mine enemies. Here again, this situation, David had, there was no man, no way he could get out of the situation. If I know it right, how it ended up is Saul was pretty much surrounded him. Saul was on one side of the mountain, David on the other. And I think they were coming around to get him. About exactly when David was practically caught, Saul got a message saying the Philistines are attacking Israel. Nobody can do that but God. David trusts in God. He said, God is my helper, and God saved him. He got it really close, if you know me. Like, God may not save you until you're at the end of your rope. But trust in God even through those times. Do you know where your help comes from? Here it says, verse 4, behold, God is mine helper. So in your trials, I want you to turn your hearts to God. So then a question, do trials naturally turn your heart to God? Does it come naturally? I'm going to look at Saul now, and one time in his life, 1 Samuel 13, which I'm going to go to. I'm going to read the first 14 verses. And Saul reigned 1 year, and when he had reigned 2 years over Israel, Saul chose him 3,000 men of Israel, whereof 2,000 were with Saul in Michmash and in Mount Bethel, and 1,000 were with Jonathan in Gibeah of Benjamin. And the rest of the people he sent every man to his tent. And Jonathan smote the garrison of the Philistines that was in Geba, and the Philistines heard of it. And Saul blew the trumpet throughout all the land, saying, let the Hebrews hear. And all Israel heard say that Saul had smitten a garrison of the Philistines, and that Israel also was had in an abomination with the Philistines. And the people were called together after Saul in Gilgal. And the Philistines gathered themselves together to fight with Israel, 30,000 chariots and 6,000 horsemen, people as the sand which is on the seashore in multitude. And they came up and pitched in Michmash, eastward from Beth-Aven. And when the men of Israel saw that they were in a strait, for the people were distressed, then the people did hide themselves in caves, and in thickets, and in rocks, and in high places, and in pits. And some of the Hebrews went over Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilgal. As for Saul, he was yet in Gilgal, and all the people followed him trembling. And he tarried 7 days according to the set time which Samuel had appointed. But Samuel came not to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. And Saul said, "Bring hither a burnt offering to me and peace offerings." And he offered the burnt offering. And it came to pass that as soon as he had made an end of offering the burnt offerings, behold, Samuel came. And Saul went out to meet him that he might salute him. And Samuel said, "What hast thou done?" And Saul said, "Because that the people were scattered from me, and that thou camest not within the days appointed, and that the Philistines gathered themselves again together at Michmash. Therefore said I, the Philistines will come down upon me to Gilgal, and I have not made supplication to the Lord. I forced myself therefore and offered a burnt offering. And Samuel said to Saul, "Thou hast done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God, which he commanded thee. And now, for now would the Lord have established thy kingdom upon Israel forever. But now that kingdom shall not continue. The Lord hath sought him a man after his own heart, and the Lord hath commanded him to be a captain over his people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord commanded thee." So here in this case, if you look in the first part, verses 1 through 8, where did Saul go when he had troubles? What was his solution? As you keep reading then, he did have major problems. He had, the Israelites had attacked the Philistines, and the Philistines had come back at Israel in number. It almost reminds me of Gideon. And I'm sure Saul knew that story, that Saul's numbers were diminishing, and there were going to be, he was going to lose the battle if he didn't keep his men. But what did he do? He took things into his own hands in this case. He disobeyed God in offering a sacrifice, which only priests were going to do. And just a question that I have for myself, was Saul's fear logical? In earthly thinking, yes, it was very logical. He had good reason to be scared. But then, through that, where do you go? If you're stressed out about life, you may have good reason to have fear, but do you go to yourself? Do you focus inward, or do I focus to God? As soon as Samuel came, Samuel had pointed at his fault. And this happened in David's life too, when somebody pointed at David's fault. But Saul, in this case, he blamed others. They made me do it. Look at my problems. I had this problem, I had this problem. It was all very me-focused. So in your problems, in your trials you're going to face this week, next month, you have a choice to make. You can look inward, or you can look to God. And I encourage you, turn to God and trust him in what he can do for us. So I'm going to go over some things that we may face as a church, that I may face, and give a few of my thoughts to go from here. So what trials are we going to face? One that I'm currently facing is busyness. I don't know, it just feels like I have too many things to do and not enough time. If God would only make 36-hour days, it'd be very nice. and just thinking about this, what's the solution here? One story came to mind. You may know Otto Koenig, the pineapple stories, and what he did in Papua New Guinea. So he was a missionary, and he was translating the Bible. He needed to spend time in language study and translation. That was a requirement for the mission. He was required to do X amount of work per month and get a certain amount done. And so while working there, the natives somehow started, he had a workshop. He enjoyed working these things. And the natives found out he could fix things. So Otto Koenig sometimes would have things that would break in his family. He would throw it out back on the rubbish heap because it wasn't worth his time to fix it. Well, the natives would pick it up and bring it to Otto. Otto, can you fix my things? Otto had already made the decision it wasn't worth fixing it. Otto, can you fix my things? You fix your things for your wife and you don't fix things for me. You don't love me. Otto, can you fix my thing? And it came down to it. He was spending too much time repairing the natives' things to fixing their junk. He was not getting his language study done. And the mission was starting to catch on. He was starting to have problems in the area. Finally, he said, God, I give you my time. I don't have enough of time. I give it to you. You tell me what to do. Earlier, he had been grumbling and complaining to the natives. I don't have time. I don't have time. I don't have time. Finally, he said, okay, natives, I'll fix your junk. I'll fix your stuff. God, I give you my time. During that time, I think he showed God's love to the natives. He was not getting translation done, but God's love was being shown to the natives. And it paid dividends in the future for him. He maybe didn't get as much translation done, but people were coming to Christ. And really, what does it matter? What's the important thing in life? Is the important thing in life that you get your work done at home, your busyness? I have certain things to do. Is that important things? Or is it important thing that I maybe share with my children, take time with them? It's important versus sometimes urgent. For myself, so looking at going to Kenya, I've got lots of things to do. I don't really have time to study for a sermon. It's kind of what I felt in some ways. I don't have extra time. But I finally was like, okay, I just have to trust God. I'm going to be okay. God will have to help me some way to get my work done. And I go forward anyway. You turn to Christ in your time of busyness. Next thing thinking about was loneliness in the church that we may face. I don't know how many of you feel lonely in what you're doing. I know I have sometimes in going to Kenya. No one else is going to Kenya. You don't know what I'm going through. And in some ways, you can so quickly get into that. Or friends are going to be leaving the church here. Or you're leaving and you're leaving friends here. Loneliness, how are you going to face that? First off, you're probably not the only one dealing with it. In Proverbs 18:24, is the one verse I can go to. A man that hath friends must show himself friendly. So, do you want friends? And what are you doing about it? Just because you don't have friends doesn't mean you can just go sit in a corner somewheres and pout, I don't have friends. Just thinking about it already, and just in large groups, sometimes maybe say after a wedding, there's a large group of people, and if you don't know the crowd very well, you can just go stand in a corner. I mean, and you just don't know anybody very well. But sometimes in those cases, go be a friend to someone else. There are other people that might be similarly that don't know a lot of people. Go be a friend. Go find someone. There's someone else that's maybe not talking to someone, feeling lonely, something's wrong in life. Go find someone. Be a friend. Follow God in that. So in some ways, turn to God and follow his word, what he says to do in loneliness. Next thing I had was financial worries. So with the moving, the outreach, looking at, there's going to be some financial struggles, I expect. I'd be surprised if there wasn't, or I don't know about struggles, but worries, like you're worried about, well, how will everything go in moving? Job isn't working out quite as well, maybe not as many jobs coming in. There's expense in moving, and also here for the home church, your expenses here won't diminish that much, and your be missing a bunch of people, let's say in the general fund. What's the solution for that? I think it's turning to God. Even God may not, you may still have the problem on your hands, but if you can turn to God, the problem will not be my problem, it'll be God's problem. God, you have a church here, you have me to take care of. Take that the way I mean it. But trust in God. One thing I've learned in finances or just thinking about some of the stuff, there's been times in my life where the last few months I've worked well or worked hard, had put a lot of hours in. And so finally I'm getting ahead in life. I'm finally getting ahead. So excited. Guess what? Here comes a medical bill. It doesn't take long for a medical bill to set you back behind. And the more I've seen in life, God doesn't value at all. Excuse me. God's valuation has nothing to do with your bank account. God's valuation of you has nothing to do with your bank account. He wants your heart. So if maybe sometimes touching your bank account is the method to get your heart, he might do that. So let's turn to God. Excuse me. Let's turn to God. Turn your heart to God before God brings a problem, during the time God may bring you financial struggles, and after. Turn your hearts to God. Another one, thinking about struggles in the church, is the work struggle here. So we have a few businesses that are going to be missing some leadership in the future. And for myself, I like an example. So I'm going to put myself as one of the shop employees at Bald Eagle. So I'm a shop employee at Bald Eagle, and Sean's leaving. I can start worrying about who's going to be the shop foreman. How's this all going to work out? Is so-and-so going to be shop foreman? Are they going to pick so-and-so? I don't know if I can get along with him. Or you can just start worrying all the time. Do you turn to God in those times? Do you, give God your problems. As employers then, do you hold your employees with an open hand? God can take your employees. God can put another one in. There's a man that I worked with in Pennsylvania for a number of years. I always appreciated him. He told me, for the most part, if I'm taking off for mission-related things, he said, you don't ask me, you tell me that you're taking off. And I really appreciate that. And his testimony was, God has always provided. If I left, I went to Mountain View when I was working for him. He was like, that's fine. God will provide. I forget. I think one of the other guys from church just directly started working for him. And God had provided for him in that area. So yeah, I keep jumping back to turn to God. That's what I want you to get. I want you to get turn to God. But like I did say, turning to God may not just remove the problem, but it may be kind of like David and Saul, in that as you turn to God, your problem becomes a non-event. Like when they were facing Goliath, Saul had a problem. It was Goliath. David, I'm not sure if David had a problem or not. I don't know if he had a trial there or not. But turn to God, trust God. As you trust God, your fear will dissipate, and God can walk you through your trial, walk with you through your trials. Another thing that I know comes up at my house sometimes, my wife will come, I'll come home and my wife will say, I have so many things to do today, and all I did was take care of sick and grumpy children. I didn't get anything done. I've been thinking about that already and have thought about it in the past. This life is not getting things done only. I mean, yes, you have things that need to be done. But as you can show, this is an ideal time to show love to your children. If they're sick, if they're not happy, show love to your children. I think those things will, so as you show love to your 5-year-old, I think it'll pay dividends when they're 15. I think it'll make a difference. I know when I come home, and this is for you ladies, when I come home from work, I don't care exactly how perfect the house is, but it does make a difference how mom is feeling. if she's stressed out about my house isn't getting cleaned, I didn't get my house cleaned this week, whatever. The house is fine. The house can be falling down. But when I notice the house falling down is when mom is stressed. When mom is just, I can't get it done. I'm just and all stressed about things. That's to me the house falling down. So turn to God in those times. Ask him for strength. Love your children. Take care of your children. And one other point I have is for the singles. Talking to some of the singles. Me as married, I have all this stress at home and this and that, the other thing. And I look at the singles, they just got life made. They got nothing to do. They have no responsibilities in some ways. It's just, they can do whatever they want. They can go on vacation here, that. But then I think back to my life, how it was. I don't think it was exactly easy for me either. Going to think of dating a little bit. So Ash and I had dated for a while. Most of you probably know that. And we broke up. It was not an easy time in my life. Just seemed like there were so many unknowns in life. What do I do? How do I go forward from here? Because we had been dating, and obviously think down those lines for a while, and now all of a sudden it's like life's in a jumble. For some reason, over that time, I had decided I was going to read through the Bible again. Before I make any decisions down that line, I'm just going to read through the Bible. And that gave me stability for a while. Now, this is kind of interesting. It took me 3 months to do it. So, yeah, it didn't take. I guess I was motivated in that case. But it did give me stability for a while. Turn your heart to God. One other thing of, I know this is advice to the unmarried also, is make yourself beautiful. Okay, so how does that work? And these things can apply to both men and women. I'm going to read something in 1 Peter. 1 Peter 3:3-4. This is actually talking to married women, but I think it applies in all cases. Whose adorning, let it not be the outward adorning of plaiting the hair and of wearing of gold or of putting on of apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which in the sight of God is of great, which is in the sight of God of great price. Turn your heart to God during this time. I don't know, for myself, I've seen enough of life. I've seen some good-looking men and ladies, both, whose heart was not towards God. And for me, they were not attractive. Make yourself beautiful. Turn your heart towards God. I also saw some simple people that were not as good-looking as some people in human eyes. Simple people that had turned their heart to God. They were very attractive. They were just fun to be around. And so turn your heart to God in that. So looking over the list of things here that I was looking over the list of things that I had thought that might be facing our church here. And pretty much in every one, turning your heart to God did not necessarily exactly change the situation. You still had the problem in life. But I think if we, like David, could fully trust that God will guide us in these areas, so if we can fully trust that God will guide us in these areas, can we honestly say that we still have trials? That makes it. So if I trust God in finances and I fully trusted him, can I honestly say it's a trial yet if I fully trust him? Just so barely. And so, if we, like David, can fully trust God will guide us, can we still say we have trials? I don't want to say you don't have trials in life, but I think as we trust God in our lives, those trials in some ways can be lessened. For close, in closing, kind of, I'm going to read another verse in James 1. Actually, James 1, I forgot. I'm going to read it. I had copied it down here. I'm going to read it in the ESV. It's James 1, verses 2 to 4. Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. For you know that the testing your faith produces steadfastness. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. So in your trials, turn to God. And I think God, and through that, God's, your faith will be increased. So next week, as you face your trials, turn your heart to God. Give him your struggles. Trust him with your life. And I think at that point, you can rest in the fact that God will take care of you. Will you kneel for prayer?